Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media and the World of Ink Network. This podcast was founded in 2011 by Marsha Casper Cook and Virginia Grenier. Their focus has always been on helping writers reach their dreams by having informative and entertaining shows. You will also hear the latest information on what's new and exciting in the publishing and marketing industry. And the shows will also cover discussions on screenwriting, audiobooks, and movies. New to the shows will be the latest style and trends in fashion, as well as nutrition, and how Pinterest can add just the right spark of attention you may need for your projects. So, sit back and relax and enjoy the show. You can find out more information about our shows and being a guest at www.michiganavenuemedia.com.
Hi everybody, it's Marsha, and we are going to have a great show today. I have one guest, Paris Afton-Bonds, and she's so interesting. I met her through Bennett, and I do miss Bennett. I have so many Bennett's friends became my friends, so she hasn't been on for a while, and she's been has a new project, and we're going to be talking about that. And the fact that she has over 50 books is incredible, and they're all, the covers are great. So on the links that I always put on, her links of all her covers are on when you click in, you'll see all her beautiful covers and everything she's done in the past. And she's also quite brave because she changed her whole life and moved on from one life to the next. So we're going to talk about that. But first off, I just want to say thank you to everybody that helped the Authors for Ukraine. They raised over $20,000, and all the money goes to the Ukraine. And it was an auction, and Amy Mead, she took care of it, and she had 170 authors. And we are all going to be sending the books out. And so it didn't go through Amazon, so the money goes straight to the Ukraine. It was a big project she undertook, and it turned out good. 20 grand is a great thing, and it's never going to be enough because it's so sad what's going on there. And all these shows, all these weeks of all talking about it, so I'm really, you know, hopeful that one day that war is going to be over. But right now we're going to have a good time with Paris, and I'm going to talk a little bit about her first because she didn't want to do it, but she is absolutely so interesting. She's she has five sons, and she raised them, and she worked, and she did all these books, and then she decided to change her whole life. But she does; she's won awards, and she said more than 50 novels. So that when you get to that amount, you stop counting, I think, maybe, and then so you think. But Paris, you are so interesting. I mean, you know, there's so many people that might want to do what you did. So you just changed your whole life. So do you want to talk a little bit about how you did that and why you did that? It's so interesting.
Well, when it started, I guess that's an introduction to how I changed my life.
Good afternoon, it's a big one, Marsha. Because most people want to. A lot of people would like to, but don't have guts.
Well, I reached, I reached almost my eighth decade, and I thought, I'm recycling the past. I wasn't doing anything different, and I travel a lot, but you come back and you still find yourself in the same mold. And I knew that I needed to change. I wanted that change, or I thought. I kept thinking there has to be a better way of for my life. You know, it was so such a routine. You know, get up and write, work, write, and go to bed, and you know, maybe go travel to a country here and there every so often, or do a promo or whatever. But the same old, same old. And I woke up one morning and a voice said, Mexico. And I thought, what?
Okay.
What? And I mean, when I say a voice, it was my voice. I was in the shower, and it came out of my lips. I looked around to think, who's in the shower with me? And I had lived in Mexico exactly, it was lacking at that point, 3 months of being 50 years that I had lived in Mexico. And I lived in Mexico City for 3 years, and two of my sons were born there, two of the five. And so I thought about it, and I thought, I'm going to do this. And I, in 3 months, I told my sons, and, you know, they thought then, dementia's setting in. She's gone wacko. Some of them tried to talk me out of it. Some of them were really supportive. And
that's interesting. They didn't all have the same opinion, right? Yeah.
No, they didn't want me to go, some of them.
Well, I'm sure.
But anyway, and the others said, Mom, what do you have to lose? And that was it. You know, at almost 80, what did I have? What do I have to lose? So I sold, you know, everything, furniture, cars, singular. And I reduced everything to really two suitcases. I had a third that I took, but it was with my laptop and my office files and, you know, everything I needed there in the third suitcase. And I moved to Querétaro, Mexico. And how I chose that is, I think, this is interesting. It's not about me so
yes,
much.
Yes, it is. No, it isn't. No, don't worry. You're not boring. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
50 years ago when I lived, I was 26 when my husband worked for PepsiCo International. We moved to Mexico City, and I hired a 16-year-old maid, exactly 10 years younger, to work for us. And she worked for us for those 3 years, and then we arranged to bring her back legally for a year. And at the end of that year, she had to return to Mexico, and we just bawled. I cried. Yeah. She was like my my daughter, my sister, my best friend.
Wow.
And of course, she my children. I mean, one of my children spoke Spanish because of her before he spoke English. What am I saying? So anyway, I kept in touch with her over all these 50 years.
Wow.
And so it's 50 years ago this past December that we actually lived in Mexico. But I moved in September to Querétaro, and I had asked her, I said, do you know of a place I can rent until I find where I really want to stay? And she said, come live with me until you know where you want to stay. So I stayed with her for 2 months until I found the place I'm at now. And I think it's just, I don't know, miraculous how things come full circle. Exactly 50 years later, here I am. And the book that just came out and is about a Mexican housemaid, and based on the truth, but we'll get to that, is partially dedicated to this friend, sister, daughter, housemaid, Isabella is her name. So it's partially dedicated to her. That's it.
See, because, you know, honestly, a housemaid at those times, to carry on this relationship all the way through is like a family member. It's not, you know, that's what she became, I'm sure, to you, after all those years.
Like a sister. And after I got here, my Spanish, I'd forgotten so much, and she was so invaluable in helping me to get settled in. It was not an easy transition, but I'm so glad I did it. I've been here.
Well, I mean, because really, a lot of people sometimes they do think about it, but they don't do it, you know. And so you did it. So and you're happy, you know, and that's a good thing.
I will say I miss my family and friends there, but on the good side, I am required to go back every 6 months because of Mexican law to renew my visa. And we don't take each other for granted now. You know, if you see someone every weekend or every day, you start taking them for granted. So now we really appreciate each other when I do go back. I've been back twice, actually, since I've moved here.
Yeah, well, right, and then there's COVID and all of that, so it's not – people aren't traveling the way they did before. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's just different now.
It is more difficult. I like 24 hours, no more than 24 hours before I fly back into the United States twice now, I have to stand in line and get a COVID-proof testing. So it's just one more little, you know, dip in returning, but it's well worth it.
So I think, you know, but we have, there's a lot of subjects I want to talk to you about, but I do want to talk about your new book. And so this is quite an endeavor, this book. And most of your books are because you go through history. You go through history. That's hard, you know. And even though I was, you know, when I started, you know, researching about what you've done, I mean, with this book. So tell everybody about your book right now because it's such you know, it's a, I'm sure this is close to your heart because you, when you write things like this, you're involved in your writing. I know that. And you love your writing. And that's a good thing.
Yes, I am very lucky about my writing that I love. I'm following my passion. And so, I mean, every day I get to do something I love. It's not always easy.
Yes.
But
this
about the book, I was on another, I was actually writing on another book. And it was taking place in the 19th century El Paso. And I stumbled across this fact that blew my mind. And I'll share it in a second, but I thought, I have to write this book. I knew I was called to write it. So I set aside the other book on the back burner, which I've only done once before. And I'm hoping to get back to this, the book I was writing on. But this fact that I stumbled across, some of your listeners may be old enough, but Paul Harvey was a renowned radio speaker, and he had his own program called The Rest of the Story. So, Marcia, I'm going to share the story I stumbled across, and then the rest of the story, which is mind-blowing. The story I stumbled across was about a 17-year-old housemaid, and it reminds me of Isabella. I hired her when she was 16. But this was in 1917, so over 100 years ago, about 102 years ago. She was in Juarez, and she would cross every day as a housemaid, like the field workers, the factory workers, other housemaids, to work in El Paso. No passport, no visa, nothing was ever required to go back and forth across the Rio Grande. However, on January the 28th, she found out that because of typhus, there was a report that the Mexicans, the community there in Juarez, had a typhus outbreak. And so the government, the U.S. Public Health Department, built a plant right below the bridge, the international bridge on the American side, and all Mexican workers crossing over every morning were required to have a bath ticket. They were to be forcibly sprayed with a chemical, which was kerosene and another chemical, Cyclone B. And that ticket was good for 8 days, and they'd have to do it again and again and again. And she led a revolt because they also probed every orifice. And if you did have lice, you were shaved. If you were female, you did get the chemicals, the kerosene, put in a head wrap on your hair one more time just to hope to kill any lice. But and people talk about shoes melting in the secadora, which is a dryer, because all your clothes were also chemically treated. And she was on a trolley.
Well, you know, they had to get all undressed. They had to get undressed. Okay,
yes,
and
there were three separate rooms.
Did they give them anything to put on, or did they just let them be naked?
No, the men went to one room, the children went to another, and the women went to another. Now, I have seen later photos, so I'm going to tell you, I don't know. From what I read, they were stripped naked, all their clothing was put in. I saw photos. This went on until 1958, I believe, and I saw photos of the 40s and 50s of the men being sprayed, and they were either naked, or I did see some wearing trousers. But if you go online and look and Google it, you will see them naked being sprayed. But anyway,
I did
she was on the trolley.
It's like in the Nazi camp. The same like in the Nazi camp.
It blows.
They had to get all
undressed.
This is
what I was getting into.
Yeah.
The rest of the story. So anyway, she led this revolt of 30 maids on this trolley that went back and forth, and it closed the bridge. Bridges are actually two. For over 3 days, more than 1,000 people got involved. It made international news, and she was called, and she was redheaded. She was called the Amazon, the red-haired Amazon, and she was arrested that night by the El Paso City Police, and she disappeared from jail. She disappeared from history, was never heard of her again.
Wow.
So I knew I had to write a story, and I wanted a happy ending for her. What they really think happened was that if they did not prosecute her, which they were doing, and they actually hung to the others, if they did not prosecute her, she would cause more chaos. And if they did prosecute her, she'd become a martyr. So they just, they speculate she was removed from jail and dumped in the desert, her body. But no one knows, so I'm going to make that clear.
Yeah.
So for the rest, for Paul Harvey's, the rest of the story, and I'm just about finished, but this is the mind-blowing part. I told you that this went on until 1958, this chemically spraying, forcibly spraying of the Mexican workers. Mm. In 1938, the German Scientific Journal read about this and praised it, and they praised the El Paso formula for delousing the people. And they said, well, we can do this with the Jews that we are incarcerating. We can delouse them. And then this continued, and when the Hitler came across with the final solution, they exterminated not only the lice, but they exterminated 6 million people, Jews, gypsies, homosexuals.
So
this is Paul Harvey's, the rest of the story that is just horrifying that we bury in history. And if we don't pay attention, it repeats itself. And I'm really worried right now that it's going to repeat itself in Russia and the Ukraine.
You know, honestly, it's just, you know, when you think of all these things that have happened to people in the past and you see what goes on now, it's hard not to think of that.
Yeah.
Because it's out of whack now. It's not. It's nothing like it was. And it's people don't have this. They don't, you know, a lot of people, like we were saying before, you're right now in Mexico and you're saying everybody is very lovely and nice and all of this. But there's so many people now that are not, you know, getting along with each other, and they're not being nice to each other, and we're headed in not a great way for people to really care about each other.
Well, when I say the people have been so gracious, and the Mexicans, and helping me and assisting me, and just a lovely, lovely people. But still, we have here, you know, the drug cartels, and you have to be very careful. So no matter where you are in the world, there is that danger,
I mean, and it's a big danger, you know. I mean, it's, you know, but when you decided to do this, I mean, you've written historical, and that's what you like to write. So
I've written also about the mistreatment of the Native Americans. Right now, I could say the mistreatment of, if you want to pick, in our culture, the cancel culture. But we could look for the negative, and I really want to look for the positive. What can we do to make
this
better?
But how do we do that? You know, because I was mentioning to you beforehand, I mean, I see, you know, a lot of, you know, I have a lot of guests on, and I read a lot of the Facebook posts, Twitter posts, and all of this posting and all of this sadness out there. How do people, you know, when Blog Talk started doing shows, you know, and then I was on Facebook and everything, I met all these people and everybody was nice to each other and shared, and now people aren't sharing things and they're putting different things on than they started to do. What we started to do 15 years ago was put about our books and our careers, and, you know, people shared and cared about each other, and now there's so much sadness that goes into that. Like, sometimes I'm scrolling down and I'm thinking, why am I on this? You know, because it can't be good mentally to keep seeing such, you know, everybody puts everything out now, good and bad. And so in the sadness, and we've had 2 years of COVID, over 2 years, and I've had so many guests talking about COVID. I mean, and all of these people are seemingly, you know, everybody's trying to move on, but they can't seem to do that.
I just won't let that stand in my way, even though COVID, when I moved, it was still a, and it still is. I'm not going to let that stand in my way. That's the reason I wrote Reluctant Rebel. I wanted a happy ending for this misfortunate
person. No, that's true, though.
Heroin.
And remember the days when people, when in most of your books that you have in life, how it was, authors like to give a happy ending. I like that, too. You know,
exactly.
We want
I'd like
that.
To talk about that for a second. People say,
yes, do
oh,
that.
Come on,
yes,
life's
definitely.
Not happy. You know, get real. But what it is, each of my books is a happy resolution to that particular situation. It doesn't
right.
mean that these characters might not go on and have problems, but in my book, they have happy endings.
Right.
For that
yes.
particular situation.
Right, and
I think
like
what
that.
We put out there, we get back. Yes. I think we ought to be very, very careful what we put out in our words even.
Yes, I do think that because in, you know, years to come when people read, you know, once you write a book, it's out there. You know, it's not,
oh, yeah.
you know, we don't know who buys our books. The books are everywhere. So, I mean, that's one of the things that happy endings can do at the situation. You're like a happy ending for now. Doesn't mean that, right, like
yeah.
you said, doesn't mean that it's always, but, you know, you really want to have something good, not bad. You want them
exactly.
to come away feeling better.
And I think that's what you do even in your program, that you make us feel better when we listen.
Oh, thank you.
Even in our everyday actions, you know.
Yeah.
No one really wants to hear about if I stub my toe and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, no, right.
They want to hear about something good. And so
right.
I think you do that.
And I think
you
that's a good
best.
Thing. You know, right. And I do think that's a good thing. And, you know, that's why, you know, you've done all these books and you've raised 5 sons. And I'm sure there's been trauma in your life like everybody's had, but you do move on. And so I think that's true. People... That is the thing that they're not doing a lot of times. They're not moving on. And as writers, we try to give them something to read or, you know, and the cancel culture, as you called it before, it's like this is where, you know, all of a sudden somebody's taken off the map. So we're
yeah.
living in that kind of a world, and while we're writing, whatever we're doing, you know, anybody can get in trouble at any time.
Oh, yeah.
And... Yeah, right. No, I mean, it's just it's life.
No,
but,
I've been in trouble,
but
yeah.
the fact is, right, exactly. And the fact is they can get in trouble, but can they get out of it? And we hopefully, you know, and we're, as writers, we want them to get out of whatever trouble it is. So at the end, they have a new start, let's say, a lot of times. And there's nothing wrong like you did. You took a new start to your life.
Yeah, it was scary. But I'm glad I did it, but... it wasn't easy, but I do it. I just like to say this. Everything
yep.
that I was anticipating, and I wanted to try to be positive, but really I was thinking, oh, what could go wrong? You know, you're trying to look
yeah,
at
well,
it.
Yeah, well, right, right.
And it was scary, but Marcia, every single step fell into place so easily.
Yeah,
I mean, and when I say easily, for 2 months I was without access. I didn't know it was going to happen, but I thought I had everything lined up. Got down here, and I was without access to my banking funds for 2 months. And yes,
wow.
I wanted to cry.
Well, that's
did,
a big. That, that's
I,
a problem.
Honest, I got tears
that's,
in my
that's
eyes.
You,
I
that's
went,
not
oh.
a good. That's not good.
That is hard. And I got tears in my eyes. I thought, this is a sign to go back. Let's just head
no.
back now. But it worked oh. out beautifully, and I'm so glad I went ahead and stayed. I'm really
See,
glad.
We talked about this before, briefly, the happy endings and things like that. And some of the things that go on lately, you know, with writers, with all, you know, I think what writers have to realize is they have to do the best story that they can, and they can't keep worrying about what every person thinks about it, because then they'll never finish a book.
You
so
said
how
it
do you
perfectly.
Get past that? How do you get it past? How do you get past that?
I think you said it perfectly. Not to worry. I can't worry
yeah.
about how it's going to be received. I have to do my best and write what I like to write. And I will admit that while I'm writing it, it's crappy. I've got to mention this, that Deep Purple, which made the New York Times bestseller list, we lived on a ranch, and we had a great big 55-gallon drum out and back, and I was halfway through that book, and I was ready to burn it. And when you say burn it,
yeah,
we didn't
no, have I've actually had authors on there that have done this, that have actually
so,
gone in their yard and burned
well,
their work.
I was going to, except I had my publishing house's upfront money, the advance, and I had to produce something, so I had to marshal on through that book. But I can remember calling my best friend, Rita Clay Estrada, who founded RW, Romance Writers of America, and I called her and I said, Rita, this book is horrible. I cannot tell you how bad it is. I was crying. And she said, are you telling me, Paris, that it has no plot? Yes, it has no plot. She said, are you telling me, Paris, it has no characterization? No characterization. Paris, are you saying it has no theme? No theme. And she said, Paris, you've got yourself a bestseller. And I swear, it went on and made the New York Times bestseller list.
Really? Okay.
So I think that's, back to your question, I think it's important we go ahead and finish what we start. And even if it looks like crap, just keep working at it, because that's what you enjoy doing is writing. And
if it sells,
well accepted, that's your icing.
Right, and that's the thing, you know, and that is interesting, because sometimes when I get to a part, and I've talked to one of my friends, I go, you know, I really hate this. I said, I don't know if I, you know, I just hate it. It's bad. And then they go, oh, you must be nearly finished now. I'm going like, well, yes. They go, because you say this every book you do. Because then you go like, oh, I just don't know if I could finish this. It's not good. Nobody's going to like it. The dialogue isn't right. Maybe the characters, who knows, should I make it better? Should I change this? And then they go like, oh, almost finished. Almost done. Because
they know
it's just what happens. Yes, I guess I go through this constantly. But the thing is, I started this years ago, and when I was, you know, an agent and everything, and I kept wanting people to keep writing, and that's one of the reasons I do the show, because I want them to keep writing, because, you know, we are very hard critics a lot of times on ourselves, and when we do a page, we could do a page 20 times. You think a reader's going to read our page 20 times? They're not. They're read it and move on. They're not going to. But then you have those reviewers that go, oh, they forgot a comma, and oh my God, they did this wrong. And so I had somebody on my show, I don't know if you know Jack Remick, he's a really great guy. So he was a professor, and he did movies, books, everything. And he one time said to me on a show, he goes, you know, if a reviewer doesn't like your book, that's okay, because you're not going to sit and rewrite it again. And that's about it. You're not. Just move on. You know, just because somebody might not like it. So, and I think it's hard to do that mentally, but we have to do that. I talk to myself
quite a bit. Well, yeah, it's all about following your passion, and your passion should be writing. If you're in it for fame or fortune, you're in it for the wrong reason. You should be doing it because you enjoy it, even though you're suffering and bleeding at the temples when you're writing.
You're right.
This is what it's about. And if it does make a bestseller list, or if you make a fortune off of it, if you make a series on TV, that's the icing.
Yeah. Right. It's true. And that the name of my show actually started, you know, good story is a good story, because I had a manager years ago, and he had passed away, but he had in my head, he would go, you know, just write a good story, and that's what you need, a good story. Because if you don't have a good story, it doesn't matter if your commas or your, any of the punctuation, if the story's not good, that's not good. So make a good story, enjoy it. And that's the thing I think a lot of people are not finding. They're not enjoying it as much because they have all this marketing and everything, you know, and most people know that I don't like marketing, but I do it. But I really don't like it because it drives me crazy, because it when I see how much time I spent and other people do out there, I'm thinking, I could be writing. What am I doing? Just sitting here.
We're writers.
You know?
We're not marketers. Now talking to you, I'm not a marketer, a promoter. And I think, oh, what am I doing? And I get nervous. I'd rather be writing. But thank you for letting me promote my book. I appreciate it. I wanted to mention, and I think it was Catherine Levesque that said, when you mentioned about, you know, someone writing a review badly, about how bad your book is, let's say.
Yeah.
And I can't repeat what she said over the radio here.
Okay.
She said, a freaking book.
She used another F word,
but she said,
it's a story.
For Pete's
sake, you're right.
It's just a freaking story.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly.
Don't.
You're right. because I was talking to one of my friends. I'm going, look, this is a story. That's all it is. You know, and I think people expect, you know, you every book or every paragraph or every chapter can't be like, you know, oh, stars all over it. It's a story. That's why people need to read the beginning,
yeah,
middle, and end. If they don't read the end, they don't know how good the story is, because if you don't finish it and you start and you give someone a review without finishing it, that's so unfair. Don't review it. Because I've had people on here and they don't write any, a lot of them don't write anymore. And, you know, as I was saying with Bennett was a reviewer and he was tough. You know, and people would be mad at him. But the fact is he didn't want him to stop writing, but some did. I mean, I know people that did. And I said, it's just
they stopped
book.
Writing because of his review?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Of a bad review. Yes, they did.
A bad review?
Because they thought
no,
they started
reviews.
A question. Well, you know what? That's interesting because I tried not, I wasn't reading them, and then I started reading them, and then I found one, you know, that was on from 2012, and I read it, and I'm going, like, what is this about? You know, I didn't even know it was out there, because I don't really, I have to be truthful, I don't like Goodreads, and I've said it a million times. I don't even understand Goodreads. When I get on Goodreads, I go
either,
like...
I don't either, Marcia. I don't like it.
I go, like, I have to get out of this.
I have to navigate.
Yeah, I go, like, I think I need to get out of this. I go in, and there's actually a link on my website, but I go in, and I go, oh, no. I can't do this, and I get off because I don't know what it's for.
It's not easy to navigate.
First of all, if people are looking, they go like, oh, I might try your book. Well, what does that mean? I mean, who needs that? If you don't, it's kind of weird because then they go, oh, this is on my list of books to read. And most likely, if I haven't, but if you go back, those people probably never got your book. You know, I mean, if you have to think that much to get my book, you're not getting it.
You know?
And I'm thinking, well, you know, so I just, that's something about that Goodreads. I cannot, when I get on there, I go like, I don't even get it. I just don't. Amazon,
I don't either.
Okay, that's good to hear because I don't.
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, so my shows usually, the people listen, I'm trying to explain to them that just write. And because it's obvious you love writing. I mean, and your covers, okay, like who picks your covers? They're very bright usually and they have good coloring and, you know, they're interesting. So how do you decide what cover to have and what you want on your cover? Because that's hard for people.
When I first started out, one of the major publishing houses, who was it? Was it Ballantine or Fawcett? I had cover approval, which as it came down to the wire meant nothing because I objected to one of the covers. And they nope, too late to change it, even though it was in the contract. And you can, of course, fight it if you want to fight it, but that, you know.
Yeah,
who
cares?
Who has the money
to
fight
a
big
publishing
house?
Not them. Right.
So, but anyway, since I have the rights back to many of my books, as an indie publisher, I reloaded them, and various artists, cover artists, have done the books. And of course, now I have cover approval, and I
because you're the boss.
There really are. I've been very lucky to have some great cover artists.
Yeah, that's good. You know, because people, you know, things do matter a lot of times. The title matters, you know. And I think we all, you know, sometimes people have been on the show talking about the fact that they didn't like their covers and they change them and they do better. So I think nothing is ever written in stone in any of this. If you're independently published, you can do whatever you want. And if you're with a publisher, you can't. And when you get your rights back, you can't because you might not stay with them or they may not want you or they may be out of business, which a lot of the smaller publishers are. They're gone. Since I've started doing radio shows, I know so many publishers. They were smaller publishers, but they had a lot of authors. But they're gone. They just couldn't do it. It's because it's very hard. It's not easy to be a publisher.
Well, I wanted to ask you, having been an agent, where do you see your role? Is it one that's disappearing, or with indie publishing, or what do you see now?
I see that this is really good for authors because I think that over the years I had so many good clients and I couldn't get them anywhere because I took new clients. And I was a WGA signatory. I just couldn't, you know, we did a lot of screenplays and things of that nature. And so people just couldn't get, and they left. the field. And I'm so, and I talk about this a lot because some of the ones that I had were great, really terrific authors. And independent publishing is for those people if they stayed in it, but they really, a lot of them didn't. Because if they couldn't get a publisher, so what? Now it's really, I think it's very open market for people, and you don't have to worry about the fact that you can't get a publisher. You have to just get an editor, do your book cover, but you can, there are people out there now that help people. And Amazon helps, you have to pay them, but at least they help you. And you should go to someone that's not over, some of them are very overpriced. And that's why I kind of tell people, check all these people out, because some of these people do charge way too much money and aren't really good for them. So I always say, if you have a question, just ask me, you know, because I'll be happy to answer them. But I do think this is the best time of all for indie authors, because I think that people out there, the reader doesn't care who your publisher is. They care about your story and if it's good, and they enjoy it. That's what I think. Do you agree on that? It's a story.
I agree on that, and I assume you're talking about both cover artists, about editing, everything.
You have to do it, right?
About,
right, because you're doing this. You're
being
fine.
Careful
when you do
who
indie.
Who you get.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask
Very
you
true.
Then on this, Marcia, so everyone, if they want to, can write a book and put it up, you know, on Amazon, get it published. It's not that difficult to get it published. Writing it, yes.
Yes,
so
yes.
What do you do for these writers who, there's thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions out there.
Well, I think what the thing is, I think that one of the things that they can do is try to get on radio shows and try to get somebody, not a lot of money, because a lot of people, writers don't have a lot of money a lot. So try to get someone to help you do a little marketing, do banners, do different things. But I, after all these years, I actually think one thing is you've got to get as many books as you can out there, because I really think you can dwell. I'm one of those people that will, you can't keep reading it and reading it and reading it, and you just have to put it out there eventually and keep writing. Because if you know, it's true, because sometimes, like I said before, you know, but I also have another thing. When people write screenplays, which I did, if you can, try to do them in a book. Not everybody can do that, but if you can make them in a novel or novella, which is what I do, novellas a lot, because someone may find your book and they might want to do it in a movie, but they're not going to read. They're not going to want to read 400 pages a lot of times. So if you can do a novella from the screenplay and use those characters, don't keep them in the drawer, because when you do a script, all your work is in the drawer and nobody may ever see it. But if you do it and get some help publishing and editing and doing that, you might, your story, like you said before, you didn't even like your story and then you won an award on it, you know. So we are tough on ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I think, like I said to my, I said, next time when I'm finished with this, I have a new book coming out. This first time I've done the series, so it's the second one in the series, you know, and it's called Second Chances, and I'm doing a third one. But after that, I said, I think I'm going to just go under another name, because I don't care if they know who I am. I just want to be somebody else sometimes, you know. But obviously,
now, that's
you never
interesting.
Did. Yes, I know.
No, I never did. But there was a reason early on. When you were with a major publishing house, they owned the rights to your name unless it was any pseudonym. Now, to your own name, they could not own the rights. So I never used a synonym because they had the rights
to
that.
That's true. Right.
Now, that's probably no longer true.
Do you copyright your book? I do. I copyright it with Washington myself, every book I do. Do you do that, or do you just go with the publisher?
My publisher does. As far as indie publishing, I have paid to have it done.
Yeah, by the copyright office in Washington.
Yeah.
And I tell people that because the last thing that anybody wants is to be standing by a judge and they say, well, why didn't you just get your own copyright? Because it's like $50-some dollars now. And what are you going to say to them? No, I just didn't feel like it. No, just spend that money because it's good for 100
just go
years.
Go ahead. It's worth it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is.
Is that how long
it's
good for now? I think
it is like 100 years.
I didn't know if it was for a lifetime of the author.
It could be. But it's hundreds, so, you know, most likely that is the lifetime of most people, so we'll see. You know, who knows going to live after that. But I think that, you know, one of the things is I think that, you know, try to get, you know, to have friends that are in this business that understand this, because your regular friends, they don't understand this business because we're so invested mentally in this. You know, it's this is our life. You know, this is our life. Whether we're watching TV, we're watching a movie, in our head is another somebody talking to us about what's our story. And you could see something on TV have nothing to do with your book, but it gives you an idea. A lot of people,
I know, you know, friends think of writers as being, and I put this in an interview I just did, but as being free spirits. But actually, there's a difference between being a free spirit and being flighty. And flighty, I am not. I am committed every day to writing.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, free spirit.
Me too.
I'd like to say that too. I feel like a free spirit. I do my own thing mentally, you know, and I don't copy other people's work. And that's one of the other things. Try to do your own story. Don't keep reading everybody's story and add their story to your story. You know, do your own. I know. I don't know why they do that.
Hollywood trotting out all these sequels, you know, and I just think, why? Why not do something original?
Well, that's the other thing, right? That's the thing. And, you know, I've said this many times. You know, unfortunately, they are missing the boat because there are tons of scripts out there that are fabulous, and they're not getting them because their agents won't let them read anybody unless they have an agent. And you know what? The job of an agent, you know, if you're not one of the top money earners, that agent is not going to do anything for you. And that's a sad thing,
right,
but it's true. It is true, you know. And I think I really think that the stars have no idea how many people actually contact their agents, and they won't let them read the script. And that's sad because you know how many there's a ton of writers out there that are fabulous. And a lot of them they wanted to be WGA. So that's why I became WGA, so they would read the scripts. But they still don't know what they want. And a lot of them now, there's less of a chance I think you can get your script done because they're writing, directing, producing all in-house together. You know, they're under one.
And you might want to say Writers Guild of America property, because some people might not know WGA.
Right, Writers Guild of America. And I was on the East Coast, I'm in Chicago, but it was considered East
West.
Coast.
Yeah.
We had different rules than the West did. But I still to this day feel bad about a lot of the people that gave up writing. And, you know, so that's why when I have the shows, I think people listening to the shows, they understand that it's not easy, and that's why some of the things I say to them are things that I've made a lot of mistakes, but because I've made mistakes, I've learned. So I feel
every
day I learn. Yeah, don't you feel that way? You have to be.
I've made more mistakes than anyone probably. But as far as writing, it's, you know, it has to be your primary job. I was in that interview you had called me on. I had mentioned that at one point I was working, I was working four jobs, 7 days a week for almost 6 months. And now one of those four jobs, I agree, was writing. But I had three more jobs that kept me busy 7 days a week for almost 6 months just to support my children. But never could I imagine giving up writing. To me, that's like giving up breathing. I mean, the happiest I ever am is when I'm writing. And the most miserable.
And you know, that's true. But I know when I sit down, I'm really happy doing this. And I do know when I sit down to do marketing, I'm uptight when I'm doing that, because in my head, I don't think it works that well, you know. And I've had marketers on, and I have people marketing. But if you, that's why I'm telling people, that's what I think now, is just to write the best you can and get that story out.
Yes.
And don't keep thinking about this one has 20 books, this one has 50 books, if you only have 5 or 10 or whatever. Just keep writing. Because the truth is nobody ever knows if they're going to get a bestseller. You cannot know that, regardless of what anybody thinks. You don't know. And you could get
you're
one.
You're right. You cannot predict a bestseller, can you?
No, you can't.
I remember long, long ago, one of the major publishing houses put a ton of money into marketing. I think it was called The Century, and we're talking maybe 50 years ago, and it was predicted to be a bestseller, and they pushed it, and they already, before it ever got out, they had it on the book banner, number one bestseller, and it bombed.
Yeah.
You cannot predict. And then look at Tom
See, because
Clancy,
even when you see the Academy
out
Awards.
With, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just
going to
say Tom Clancy started out with Hunt for Red October, I believe it was, with a small press. I think it was Naval Press. And look, it went on, you know.
Look where he went.
Who would
look
think?
Look at everything he did. Movies, everything. And
yeah, but it
true.
Started out small, so you can't predict anything.
No, I don't think you can. And a lot of them, you know, John Grisham, I remember hearing a story about him. He went to a book signing of his own. Okay, he drove around, he was having his first book signing. He drove around the block. He was so nervous, you know, going in. And he, you know, I mean, and he didn't know if he could ever make it. You know, okay, and look what happened to him. You know, and Stephen King.
That is
and
so
there's so
funny.
Many people that are, you know, that are people out there that never thought they'd made it, do make it.
Yeah,
you know,
anybody
the one thing,
can do, but just write it.
I know, that's true, because this is the one thing that I do feel bad about. Like, when the Academy Awards this time was, and that CODA, the movie, won, it was a really great movie, and it had so many different features in it. It had bullying, it had people that couldn't hear, you know, and it had just people and community coming together, and that's what nobody's talking about. That movie had it all. It had everything in it. And they just let it, you know, they're not talking about, like, so my opinion is, I think it would be nice if people, especially kids, if they could learn how to sign, it would really be good because they can learn fast. And I think that should be part of the curriculum so people could communicate with people that can't
communicate. Yes, absolutely. And I know just a little bit of signing. And now I feel guilty. I need to go and learn more. Thank you.
But I think it's really good. I think it, you know, and they should, especially if they taught it when they were young, if kids are young, because when kids are young, they pick it up fast, you know. And even I think a lot of people learned how to do that with babies. You know, they learned how to do some signing if they wanted a cup. And I do think those are the things that they should have been talking about. And that's what's wrong with Hollywood. They don't talk about the things that matter, the lessons people, and how people really love movies. And, you know, it's a really good, especially during the pandemic. The pandemic, you know, I hear a lot of shows now on Hollywood shows. We talk about, actually next week we're going to talk about Downton Abbey and Gilded Age. And I'm having just guests not only have, they don't have to be writers. So it's just talking about things that people have in common because people are watching a lot of TV. And it's good. It's a good thing.
Do you think that's because of the pandemic? We're watching more TV because we're isolated?
Yes, I think so.
But there's some really good shows on, as I understand it. I want to confess up front, I don't even have a TV, and I don't watch TV. Don't have a radio. You're going to hate me, but I watch on
Well, what do you
do?
I don't hate
online.
You. I'm not hating you, but what do you do then? You just write?
I read. Everywhere I go, I don't have a car, so I walk everywhere. Like where you might go to Kroger and get everything you want, and you're in and out and back in an hour, it might take me 45 minutes just to walk one way and then 45 minutes back and then 45 minutes at the store. And I go to different stores. I'll go to Tienda for fresh eggs. I'll go to Carniceria for my fresh meat. I'll go to another store that handles only cleaning supplies. So,
what your life is now is what a lot of people might want to do soon. Because I think people
very
right
basic.
Now. Yeah. Because it's a different life.
And I'm,
you know.
But
it's,
I
it's,
also
it's
meet
not the same
people.
Pace. It's not the same pace.
It's slower pace, but I meet people and I'm forced to communicate better, even if it's in Spanish. But it's that meeting. I don't think we meet people anymore. We zip through the checkout line, you know. And
I'm grateful. That's what I miss during the COVID, because I miss the fact that when you had wearing masks, you can't talk to people. And I do like to talk
you
to
can't
people.
Smile.
And, you know, like my husband would always be saying, if we're in a restaurant, then if I left to go to the bathroom, I'd come out talking with somebody. Because that's what it is. I like to talk to people, but that's how I get to learn about life from other people. just their opinions and how they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important. That's what's going to be a problem now for a lot of people that aren't communicating with anybody. You can't, you know, working from home is really good, but you still have to have relationships.
Oh,
need
yeah.
That, but they don't have that.
And so I get relationships here much more than I did
see,
in
that's
the
good.
States.
See, that's a good thing. See, I want to ask you now about one thing which I didn't talk about. All right, you were a co-founder of the Romance Writers?
Of America, yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. So
yes.
How did you decide that, and what's going on with that now?
Well, how it was decided, I had actually sold my second book when I was a speaker. This was back, I think I sold my first book in 77 and it came out in 78. I really don't remember. But so my second book in 79, I was a speaker at the Southwest Writers Conference in Houston, Texas. And I think it was the Rice University. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a long time. It's been 43 years, I'm trying to think. So anyway,
so a lot has changed
in my hotel.
Then.
Pardon me?
A lot has changed now. So
I
want to hear this.
In my hotel room that night was a friend, Rita Clay Estrada, and a couple of other writers. One was Sandra Stanford, who's no longer living, but she was the first American writer to write for Harlequin. Now, Janet Daly was the second, blew the covers away. There were about six of us. Sandra Brown was in the room with us. She had not sold yet. And Rita Clay Estrada said, why don't we start a organization like Western Writers of America, and we'll call it Romance Writers. And so we decided to do that, and we had our first meeting. About 60 to 70 charter members showed up in Houston at a savings and loan. And we decided to have a conference. And Marcia, we had to put the money up front, and we were thinking, you had to get the money together. And we were thinking, well, do you think 60 people come? What if there's 80? We really thought we were going big time when we planned for 100 to show up at this conference. Marcia, over 800 people showed up.
Wow.
Had the BBC, British Broadcasting. We had New York Times. We had the San Francisco Chronicle or the Washington Post. It was huge. And we became the largest writers organization in the world with, I think it was close to 12,000 members across the continents, Australia, Europe, you name it. And unfortunately, in the last year, history got rewritten, and it was co-opted, and the membership has dropped off to practically nothing.
I don't know
what's going on there. It's sad.
Yeah, I know.
So,
it is sad.
But
it is sad.
It really helped a lot of writers over the last 40 years. So that was good.
Wow.
That was wonderful.
Because that's something that was good, you know, and that's because a lot of people did need something like that to keep them, you know, focused, to know, you know.
Did you ever attend any of the
them.
Conferences?
I didn't.
Were you
no,
able
not
to
the conferences. No, but I do know about them, you know, and I think I did join. I was a member for a few years, I think, years ago. But I think, you know, then they had the magazine and everything like that. I mean, things were so different. Everything was very different. And now I think, you know, that's one of the things. That's why, like, on my show a lot of times, if we have three or four people, then they ask questions. I'm glad you asked me some questions because I think that's what this is about. People should be able to talk to each other and not just have, you know, that's my show doesn't have, like, I would give you 10 questions to answer because it's a conversation of whatever comes up because people need to know the things from people like yourself who have done and been so successful with all these books.
Well, thank you. But
and
I've
love
also
it.
Been
and still love
a failure,
it. And
too.
Still love it.
I've had books that bombed, but all you can do is write your best and enjoy each moment because that's all you have is that moment.
Yes, and that's true. And then you have to take that moment, you know, and you really do, and not be afraid. And, you know, it does take bravery to do this because, you know, you're putting something out there. But, you know, and people, like, it took me a while to realize that what I'm writing isn't about me because it's about my character. So if people didn't like something a character did, that's the character, not me, you know. And I think people have to get over that because that's hard to get over. you know.
It is, and the reviews are difficult. You know, I would read them, and either I would get a big head when someone wrote, oh, "What a great book," or you know, my head would shrivel like a punctured balloon, when I read a bad review, and I realized you cannot please everyone, and all I can do is please myself, and that's all I can do.
But that's really good, and you know, and on that note, you know, so what's next for you?
Let's see. I am writing right now. It's about a woman in her seventh decade, almost 80, who takes a risk and answers the call to adventure and moves away from family and friends. So,
anybody
is
you
this
know?
Autobiography?
You know?
No.
Anybody?
but it does incorporate, you have to know, you have to feel, I mean, there's been times where I've probably felt like murdering someone. These are some of my own feelings about, there's not a book, you know, for dummies for aging. You know, it's about discovering adventure. So,
well, that's true because, you know, even in my book, in the new book coming out, the Second Chances, it's about, you know, a couple that they have their second chance and they both had married other people and then they were available and then they end up, you know, along with a young couple, younger couples also. But romance does happen to people that are not 20 years old. So I think Second Chances is that it's out there for everybody.
I'm
you know, no matter what your age.
I'm looking for a hot tamale here, so we'll see.
I bet you'll find one. All right. So, I thank you so much for coming on. You see, we didn't have to worry about anything to talk about because you are quite interesting.
You made it so easy, Marcia. Thank you. Okay.
I hope you come on again. I hope you come on again.
I would love it. And have a ten umbuen Dia. Have a great day, okay?
You too. Thank you so much. All right, keep your adventure going.
Hasta luego.
Keep that going.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hugs and kisses.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and thank you. And next week, we will be talking about, as I said, Downton Abbey with we're going Elizabeth Black, Jen Connors, Chris Carlson and Karen Peters and myself, and that should be very interesting. So join us. And then on the next week after that, Kat Ohm will be on about resilience coaching, because I think out there we all need to have somebody tell us how to get focused. So everybody, have a great day. Have a good holiday, Easter, Passover. Thank you. Bye.